listened to the Drew Marshall Show before?
George Bush is the Antichrist. Honest to God.
You think George Bush is the Antichrist?
Yes.
Okay, so George Bush is the Antichrist because he's a nice guy.
He's a nice guy. He's fooling people. He's a trickster.
Would you vote for George W. Bush?
Absolutely.
Why? He's the Antichrist.
I think the guy needs to read his Bible.
Would you vote for George W. Bush?
Absolutely. I hope he's not the Antichrist because then I'm going to vote for the wrong guy.
Yeah, I hate when that happens.
The Drew Marshall Show, right here on Joy 1250.
You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show, Canada's most listened to spiritual talkback program.
You may be an ambassador to England or France. You may like to gamble. You might like to dance. You may be the heavyweight champion of the world. You may be a socialite with a long string of pearls. But you're going to have to serve somebody.
Well, over the last couple of years, doing the research for topics and guests, spent a fair bit of time on the internet, and I came across BeliefNet.com. I've watched it grow, and I have been thoroughly, thoroughly impressed. And you know me and my spiritual gift of pessimism. Very, very classy, well-done website, BeliefNet.com. Before starting BeliefNet, Steve Waldman was National Editor of U.S. News and World Report, National Correspondent for Newsweek and the Washington Bureau, and Editor of the Washington Monthly. He was named by Time Magazine one of the nation's top spiritual innovators. He's a sought-after expert on religion and spirituality and a regular contributor to Slate, National Review, National Public Radio. BeliefNet.com's mission, from what I understand it, is to help people find and walk a spiritual path that will bring comfort, hope, clarity, strength, and happiness. So let's find out a little bit more about this whole BeliefNet phenomenon and chat with the big guy himself, Steve Waldman. Thanks for your time.
Well, thank you very much for having me and for your kind words.
Well, I like it. And the reason I like it is I'm all about, in doing my research anyway, finding primary source material. I got burned a number of times over the years reading what Christians have to say about Muslims instead of finding out what Muslims believe about Muslims.
Right.
Does that make any sense to you?
Yes, and that's a problem across the board. If there's so much interpretation of interpretation without reading the original material.
If you ever decide to turn your magazine idea into a website, give us a call. How many times did you hear that?
Well, you know, I was a print magazine person. I'd worked at Newsweek for a number of years, and so I had this idea for a print magazine on faith, because that's kind of what I knew how to do. But this was 1998, and they all, every time I tried to get a backer for it, they'd kind of pat me on the back and say, good luck with that. But if you ever turn it into a website, give us a call. And I reluctantly went back down to the basement and sat at my computer and thought about it again. And within about a day, I figured, oh, this is actually a much better idea as a website. And then it launched in 1999. And the reason it's a better idea as a website is because of the community aspects of it. It's not just top-down articles, but there's so many venues for people to contribute their own stories and views and interact with each other.
Well, and it's certainly not just one voice, one shtick, one spin. There's a multiplicity of spins, I guess.
Right, and that's one of the things that really distinguishes BeliefNet's approach from, you know, the literally millions of other religion websites online. Is we cover a very broad range of spiritual approaches, faiths, you know, the full range of views on Christianity and other faiths as well. And we find it, you know, very useful. And sometimes people, when we first launch, would say, well, this is going to lead to kind of a big, great, big, mushy dilution of everyone's faith. And my experience has been that the opposite happens, is that when you are in an environment where you're called upon to explain your faith, it strengthens your faith, not weakens it. And occasionally you learn something from someone else, too.
But BeliefNet has soared. I mean, can you give us some numbers?
Yeah, we have about 3 million people who come each month. And then we also have email newsletters that you can sign up for. Those are free, and that we have about 10 million subscribers to those. And that's something like, you know, daily Bible verse or daily inspirational message, things like that.
Man, 3 million a month?
Right.
You know, just to give some comparison to our listeners here, the two leading Christian sites, Salem Web Network, Crosswalk.com, OnePlace.com, Christianity.com, with nearly 1.9 million visitors a month compared to your 3 million. And Christianity Today magazine says that the online anyway, 559,000 visitors a month.
Right. And I think part of the reason that we're bigger is that we don't just push one line. And so for anyone who wants to both explore their own point of view but also ask questions, you know, without embarrassment, I think there's always a phenomenon, I think, when you go to church of embarrassment about asking stupid questions.
Yeah.
Because you think you're supposed to know the answer already, and so we've tried to create an environment where you can feel like there's no such thing as a stupid question.
But you went through some tough times, though. I mean, there were times where Miss Sams and a handful of others actually had to clean the toilets themselves.
Yes. When the whole internet .com bubble burst, which was sort of the end of 2001, beginning of 2002, the investors that we had pulled out. And we basically were about to go out of business, dark. And the amazing and really inspiring for me thing that happened, you know, we had to lay off the entire staff on a Friday, including myself. And on Monday, people showed up anyway and just volunteered. And, you know, for a while, we were all working minimum wage and cleaning the toilets and doing whatever we had. And the site never went dark. And we kept it going, a pretty small group initially, and then we kind of grew it back, got back on its feet, and now it's very secure and growing.
Mr. Nyland, I guess he's on the board, is he?
Yes.
He was
the original co-founder.
This is a great quote from him. He said, one of the things that impressed him most about you was your calm nerve. He says, he's a skinny, frail-looking intellectual who turns out to have a steel heart and gut. He's the best entrepreneur I know. Put that as your epitaph. That'll work.
I can't do better than that.
I'm sure you must get asked regularly the question, Steve, if religion is such a divisive issue, you know, how can you really have a site that caters to all faiths?
Well, certainly religion is a divisive issue, especially if you watch the news, if you look at, how it's playing out in the Middle East or terrorism or things like that. But one of the ways that we bring people together is we try to focus on issues or human needs that are naturally more unifying instead of divisive. So, for instance, where we have the best discussion across faith is not actually in, you know, interfaith dialogue areas. It's in our prayer circles. We have prayer circles, and it's basically, these are online things where someone will set up they'll set up a page for if they have a sick child and to tell people about what's wrong and to ask for prayers. And people will come and will post prayers, and sometimes people will post prayers from other faiths. And I remember vividly a case we had a while ago where a Christian woman had, whose child, boy, was very sick, I think with leukemia, and she'd created a prayer circle. And a Muslim posted a prayer. And at first she was really worried. And she went to her pastor and said, is this going to hurt? You know, is this going to hurt his health, hurt his chance for recovery that a Muslim is praying for him? And the pastor fortunately said, no, I don't think so. Take the prayers where you can get them. And over time, you know, she just came to appreciate the love that this Muslim woman was offering up for this sick child. And it's not that she came to agree with Islam or lost her faith in Christianity or anything like that. She just, it brought out, you know, the common humanity in these two different people instead of focusing on what undoubtedly were real differences around belief.
Well, I mean, it certainly reflects properly on the scripture that says, God has left a little peace in all of us, no matter what we're buying into. And I'm not a pluralist, but I am saying that there certainly needs to be tolerance and respect. We need to ramp that up a little bit, especially in the evangelical scene. Actually, I want to ask you this. Which group would you say complains the most on your site? Because I'm sort of wondering how the evangelical fundamentalists respond to this, what they would see as a pluralistic, you know, kumbaya site.
Well, in the very beginning, we had a lot of skepticism and questions from the evangelical community. But what's happened over time, first of all, just as the site has gotten big, we pretty much just represent the population as a whole. So most of our users are Christian, just because that's the way the population breaks down. But the other thing that we always stress is that we don't describe ourselves as an interfaith site. We describe ourselves as a multi-faith site. Hmm. And it's an important difference because we do not have as a principle of our mission equality of religions. It's just not my role to decide that. We absolutely welcome everyone who believes that their faith is the true faith, and we have no intention or interest in trying to convince anyone that that's not true. So people sometimes come to our site and they burrow into their own community and meet with other people in their community, and that's all they do, and that's fine. Mm. I mean, this is really about meeting your spiritual needs. And if you're a Christian and what you want and need at that moment is fellowship of other Christians or reading the writings of great Christian teachers or listening to sermons from great Christian preachers, that's wonderful. And we hope to do, you know, a bang-up job of getting you what you need. If there's another moment where you feel like you can learn from, you know, rubbing elbows with someone else, that's great too. And so Christian leaders over the years have come to view BeliefNet as really an extraordinary platform because they can both reach, reach the converted, as it were, and also reach out beyond their current pastors. To other Christians who may be unchurched or who have a different, or maybe who are alienated, as well as to people of other faiths.
But Steve, you don't really cater to all faith, do you? I mean, there's some pretty off-the-wall alternative religious movements out there. You must have some guidelines for which ones can be represented on BeliefNet.
Well, we think of it in two different parts. There's the parts of BeliefNet that are kind of crafted by the editors, meaning articles, and interviews and things like that, and that tends to be, you know, mainstream religions, and, you know, I would say, as I said before, it kind of tracks the population, so
sure.
Most of the content is Christian, and then the other faiths that we'll deal with most often would be Judaism, Islam, Buddhism. Now, in the message boards, in the communities, it's kind of really up to whoever shows up.
Anything goes?
Well, I wouldn't say anything. You know, if someone's out attacking other people or something like that, they get deleted. But if someone of another faith is, you know, posting a message to other people of that group and they're not harming anyone else, we let that be there. And it might be a small little speck in the large community, but we don't go in there and kick them out.
No. We're actually on the phone with Steve Waldman, who is the CEO, co-founder, and editor-in-chief of BeliefNet.com, a tremendous website, has been a wealth of resource in my field anyway. Tell us about the Belief-O-Matic quiz. What's that?
Well, it's a tongue-in-cheek quiz that professes to know the inside of your soul. I emphasize tongue-in-cheek because sometimes people don't always see the humor in it. but basically, what's kind of cool about it is it asks a lot of questions that you don't get asked in your normal, workaday life about what kind of relationship do you have with God, or how do you think the universe came into existence, what happens in the afterlife, why do bad things happen to good people, and you know, pretty heavy questions, actually. And then the machine whirs and then spits you out some answer about what religion you're supposed to be. And it's kind of fun because invariably, oftentimes the first choice is pretty close to what you are,
mm-hmm.
but oftentimes also the second choice is a little bit wacky or is a little off of maybe some faith you never heard of before.
Right.
And it kind of prompts you to go,
what's that all about?
What's that all about? How come I had no idea I was...
The flying spaghetti monster. Yeah, I got
yeah.
it. Oh, man. I just found out about that a few weeks ago, the flying spaghetti monster. There must be an absolute huge, huge freedom in not having denominationally challenged restrictions or conservative power brokers breathing down your neck doing this site?
Well, it's a really good point because it is, I think, we will often find that people will come to the site who are supposed to be following a particular line because they're part of a group that has a, you know, a fixed message, but they've diverged from what their, you know, the heads of the group are telling them
right. They're
supposed to think. And there's just no one fits quite the stereotype. It's very refreshing. You know, and like in America, and I don't know whether it's the same thing for evangelicals in Canada, but, you know, there's a strong stereotype of what an evangelical is supposed to believe in America. And, you know, it's so patently obvious that the stereotype holds for very few evangelicals.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great, enormous diversity among evangelicals. I mean, not on the core points, but on politics and the environment and how they live their faith and, you know, there's enormous diversity. One thing that's about to happen, and this actually isn't even public, but since I'm talking to you today, I'll give you the...
We got the scoop.
The advanced scoop. Starting on, actually, this Monday or Tuesday, we're unveiling the beta version of a brand new social network dedicated to faith and spirituality. And it's basically going to be something like, you know, Facebook or MySpace, but for spiritual people and people of faith, and a kind of a community that allows them to use, you know, profile tools and journals and blogs and things like that, and also has tools for small groups so that if you have a Bible study, a small Bible study or something like that, you can use the social network tools to help facilitate your
wow.
your group. And it's sort of to the point you just made, it's going to, I think, hopefully help empower people to express their faith and connect with others without necessarily having to go through a hierarchy.
You know, if my numbers are correct, and quite often they're not, being a grade 9 dropout here, I'm counting about 45% of the people who frequent your website, beliefnet.com, are in some form or another seeking. They're either spiritual dabblers, active spiritual seekers, spiritual straddlers, old-fashioned seekers, or questioning believers. I mean, about 45%. When was the last time you had 45% of the congregation in any church active spiritual seekers or people who are just kind of wondering a little bit?
Yeah, well, it's true because they usually don't show up if they feel like they might be, you know, held in contempt or scorned.
Sure.
If they're going to slink off into the back of the church. And there's one sort of thing about the web, the internet, is that it allows for a certain degree of anonymity. Now, there's a lot of dangerous aspects to that, too. All the worst aspects of the internet also come from the anonymity.
Sure.
But there is a little bit of a freedom to it. There's a kind of an intimacy to the anonymity. It enables people to come in and open up and reveal themselves at a very very personal level. I'm always amazed that, you know, in our community areas, how rapidly people open up to each other on pretty personal faith and emotional and questions, because they, you know, sometimes people come to our site because they're really hurting, and they are really reaching out for other people who can help them. You know, if you look at our prayer circle area as just an indicator, a lot of it has to do with people dealing with serious illnesses or crises in their family, their
wow.
health or financial.
Wow.
And I guess they're feeling there's something they're not getting in their, you know, in their community. And this is a new community that they can reach out to.
Brilliant. What are some interviews, Steve, that stand out for you? You've done a lot of interviews over the years, President Bush being one of them, I believe.
Yeah, I interviewed him the first time around when he ran in 2000. And, you know, I was very impressed. I feel like what struck me, and I've heard this from other people who interviewed him, at least in the beginning stage of his career, was... he sounded like a normal guy, you know, for politicians. You know, I was in Washington for many years and interviewed lots and lots of politicians, and they very quickly wear off any sense of spontaneity or normalcy, And Bush, you had this feeling, even though he'd been at it for a while, had not become kind of full of himself in that way. Now, I haven't talked to him in a long time, so who knows what the last 8 years have done.
No, he's certainly still not polished.
That's true. He's held on to that. And I've interviewed, and I had interviewed Clinton when he was president, not on spiritual stuff. It was for a different interview, but he conveyed a very different sense. It wasn't that he wasn't authentic, but the main thing that you get when you're with him is this intense concentration, and you are in his presence, and you feel like you're the center of the universe.
Yes, I've had an experience with him over at the International AIDS Conference, I think is what it is, and I saw that. He would burn a hole in your retinas with his eye contact.
Right. And he's such a bright man and has such an incredible memory for detail that the particular thing I was interviewing him about was a national service program, a community service program, and not exactly the foremost thing on his mind, and yet he was able to draw, he had just such a command of whatever was happening. Really, really brilliant, brilliant guy.
Other than the presidents, who else would you say? Who tops the list?
I have to say that the most interesting interviews that we've had on BeliefNet were ones that I didn't do, but we had very interesting interviews with Roseanne Cash, Johnny Cash's daughter, about her faith and how it actually helped her to deal with the death of her father.
Did I see an interview with Alice Cooper on there?
Yes, yeah. Marilyn Manson.
Right.
I get the two confused.
Well, and you're supposed to get the two confused, that's for sure.
That was an amazing interview, actually, because Marilyn Manson was probably one of the last people I would have expected to have any kind of spiritual depth.
Oh, no, he has got so much depth in that area. I'd love to have him on my show, I aim to do that. I just have to. We're going to interview Alice Cooper in a few weeks, and hopefully that'll be the segue into Marilyn, so...
Well, you know, a lot of times the folks who have been most angry in their kind of rebellion or denunciation of organized religion do so because of some negative experience
sure,
they have.
Sure.
And so it's not superficial. It's,
no.
You know, it's often quite angry, but it's based on something very vivid and often something they've thought about a lot. It's not one of those things where sometimes we try to interview celebrities about their spiritual lives, and it's like, I don't know, you know, you get this sense that they haven't really thought about it a lot, but it's one of the most exciting things we try to do with these interviews is you get the sense that probably other than your show and, maybe a handful of others, most celebrity interviews never go near this stuff. And they're just really not used to having serious questions posed to them.
But I find, people ask me all the time, Drew, how do you get these people on your show? And I find that the people are looking to open up about this stuff. It's something different. I mean, James Brown, he's never given a 30-minute interview in his life. And yet on our show, 30 minutes about his spiritual life.
Amazing. Well, and I think some of it probably is that they... it's a breath of fresh air to not get asked about who they're dating, but I think it's also that they're, some of them, not all of them, have a sense of gratitude. They know they got to the top of the heap and they're celebrities and they're rich and famous, and some of them get to a point in their careers where
it's a give back time.
It's a give back time, yeah.
And
certainly not all of them, but it's sort of heartening to see how many there are like that who feel like this might be something that they can share with someone that might help a little bit.
Speaking of who the celebrities are dating, you're married to a Christian.
I am, yes.
And you're a Reformed Jew, is that right?
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what that means, Reformed Jew.
It's, I suppose the jokey response would be is a Jew who never really knew how to read Hebrew.
Okay.
It's more complicated than that, I'm sure, but it's basically... It's a Reform Judaism emphasizes more of the kind of ethical teachings than I'd say the kind of rules of keeping kosher and things like that.
So you're not a fundamentalist Jew?
Yeah, and it's also, you know, I've been reading a lot when we've been trying to figure out how to raise our kids.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, well, it's complicated. It's complicated. But one thing, again, in the spirit of it's not that we don't have differences, but we choose to concentrate on the areas of similarity. So one of the things we talk about when we celebrate Christmas or Easter, which we do, is Jesus' teachings and the similarities with Jewish teachings, because obviously at the point he was preaching, he was Jewish. And there's obviously plenty of differences between the two faiths, but there's so much in common that I find it easier than I would have thought to craft a kind of spiritual approach that really can ground my children in Jewish tradition, but also as deep an understanding of Jesus as possible.
Well, I wish you the best on raising the kiddies. But just before we let you go, I need to know this. You need to tell us about those butt ugly orange chairs in your conference room.
Well, these I'm never going to give these away. There's a story.
I want one of those.
No, you can't. this has become a symbol. When we went bankrupt and just everyone wanted us to go away, and we were just trying to scrape by selling whatever we had, you know, selling our old furniture and desks and chairs to used furniture stores and stuff like that to raise whatever cash we could. And we had these orange chairs that were so ugly that even the used furniture stores wouldn't take them. So we said, okay, this is meant to be. We're going to keep these orange chairs. They were the only one. That was what we sat on for a while. And at the point that we actually were able to afford real chairs, I said, we're not giving away the orange chairs. These are going to be our permanent reminder of our humble, our humble beginnings.
Sure.
And how blessed and fortunate we are to, you know, have survived, and how much wonderful support we had in getting through.
That's classic. It really is. Steve, though, I want to know what the orange chairs are in your life. In other words, if you sold your company tomorrow for $100 million, you could look at this Chapter 11 to Riches story and look at your bank account and see success. But what do you have in your life, Steve, that keeps you mindful of your beginnings and keeps you level and grounded and humble? What are your orange chairs?
Yeah, my orange chairs are my kids. I have two sons, 11 and 13, and a wonderful wife. And I can't go very far without seeing exactly why I'm here and what this is all about. And I try to never lose sight of that. And I try to not lose sight of what the point of BeliefNet is too, which is not easy, you know, because you get, like any job, you get kind of caught up in your traffic numbers or your revenue or the gizmo that's not working or whatever, you know.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
A lot of mundane stuff to getting it done, and I need to try to keep reminding myself of, you know, why we're doing this. And I think just, you know, constantly being aware of my children and, you know, what they mean to me and what I'm trying to teach them keeps me pretty grounded.
Steve Waldman, CEO, co-founder, and editor-in-chief of BeliefNet.com, www.beliefnet.com, a tremendous resource, folks, a brilliant website, one of the best I've seen out there for sure. Steve, I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for your kind words and also for the wonderful work you've been doing.
Well, thank you.
Take care.
Great website. It really is, folks. You got to check it out, and you decide for yourself. All right, a short break in the show. We're running a bit behind. We're going to get to our next interview real quick. Dr. David Hawkins, author of Are You Really Ready for Love? 10 Secrets for Finding the One You Want. And as Crosby, Stills, Nash says, if you can't be with the one you want, then love the one you're with. Does that work? Is that good advice? Is that scriptural? I don't know. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Like what you've heard? Listen again online at drewmarshall.ca.
Spiritual pride. Maybe a city councilman taking bribes on the side. Maybe working in a barber shop, you may know how to cut hair. And maybe somebody's mistress, maybe somebody's heir. But you're gonna have to serve somebody.